The howls were crashing around us. They were almost here. I'm going to set the shed on fire. I splashed gasoline on the door. The smell was sharp and tugged at the back of my throat. "With us inside?" he asked. "Yes. I'd rather shoot myself if it's all the same to you." "I don't plan to die tonight, Edward." A claw smashed through the door, talons raking the wood, tearing it apart. I lit a match and threw it on the gasoline-soaked door. It went up with a blue-white whoosh of flame. The ghoul screamed, covered in fire, stumbling back from the ruined door. The stench of burning flesh mingled with gasoline, burnt hair. I coughed, putting a hand over my mouth. The fire was eating up the wood of the shed, spreading to the roof. We didn't need more gasoline. The damn thing was a fire trap. With us inside. I hadn't thought it would spread this fast. Edward was standing near the back wall, hand over his mouth. His voice came muffled.
"You did have a plan to get us out, right?"
A hand crashed through the wood, clawing at him. He backed away from it. The ghoul began to tear through the wood, leering at us. Edward shot it between the eyes and it disappeared from sight. I grabbed a rake from the far wall. Cinders were beginning to float down on us. If the smoke didn't get us first, the shed was going to collapse on top of us. "Take off your shirt," I said. He didn't even ask why. Practical to the end. He stripped the shoulder rig off and pulled his shirt over his head, tossed it to me, and slipped the gun over his bare chest. I wrapped the shirt over the tines of the rake and soaked it with gasoline. I set it on fire from the walls. No need for matches. The front of the shed was raining fire on us. Tiny burning stings like wasps on my skin. Edward had caught on. He found an axe and started chopping at the hole the ghoul had made. I carried the improvised torch and a can of gasoline in my hands. The thought occurred to me that the heat was going to set the gasoline off. We weren't going to suffocate from smoke. We were going to blow up. "Hurry," I said. Edward squeezed through the opening and I followed, nearly burning him with the torch. There wasn't a ghoul for 100 yards. They were smarter than they looked. We ran, and the explosion slammed into my back like a huge wind. I tumbled over into the grass, all the air knocked out of me. Bits of burning wood clattered to the ground on either side of me. I covered my head and prayed. My luck, I'd get caught by a flying nail. Silence, or no more explosions. I raised my head cautiously. The shed was gone, nothing left. Bits of wood burned in the grass around me. Edward was lying on the ground, nearly touching distance from me. He stared at me. Did my face look as surprised as his did? Probably. Our improvised torch was slowly setting the grass on fire. He knelt and raised it up. I found the gasoline can unharmed and got to my feet. Edward followed, carrying the torch. The ghouls seemed to have fled. Smart ghouls. But just in case. We didn't even have to discuss it. Paranoia? We had that in common. We walked towards the car. The adrenaline was gone and I was tireder than before. A person only has so much adrenaline. Then you start running on numb. The chicken crate was history. Nameless bits and pieces were scattered around the grave. I didn't look any closer. I stopped to pick up my gym bag. It was untouched, just lying there. Edward moved ahead of me and tossed the torch on the gravel driveway. The wind rustled through the trees. Then Edward yelled, "Anita!" I rolled. Edward's gun fired and something fell squealing on the grass. I stared at the ghoul while Edward pumped bullets into it. When I swallowed my heart back down into my chest, I crawled to the gasoline can and unscrewed it. The ghoul screamed. Edward was driving the ghoul with the burning torch. I splashed gasoline on the cringing thing, dropped to my knees and said, "Light it." Edward shoved the torch home. Fire whooshed over the ghoul and it started screaming. The night stank of burning meat and hair, and gasoline. It rolled over and over on the ground trying to put out the fire, but it wouldn't go out. I whispered, "You're next, Zachary baby. You are next." The shirt had burned away, and Edward tossed the rake to the ground. "Let's get out of here," he said. I agreed wholeheartedly. I unlocked the car, tossed my gym bag in the back seat and started the car. The ghoul was lying on the grass, not moving, burning. Edward was in the passenger seat with the machine gun in his lap. For the first time since I'd met him, Edward looked shaken, scared even. "You gonna sleep with that machine gun?" I asked. He glanced at me.
"You gonna sleep with your gun?"
he asked. Point for Edward. I took the narrow gravel turns as quick as I dared.
My Nova wasn't built for speed maneuvering. Having a wreck here in the cemetery didn't seem like a real good idea tonight. The headlights bounced over the tombstones, but nothing moved. No ghouls in sight. I took a deep breath and let it out. This was the second attempt on my life in as many days. Frankly, I'd rather be shot at.
Chapter 44. We drove in silence for a long time. It was Edward who finally spoke into the wheel-rushing quiet.
"I don't think we should go back to your apartment," he said.
"Agreed.
I'll take you to my hotel. Unless you have someplace else you'd rather go."
Where could I go? Ronnie's? I didn't want her endangered anymore.
Who else could I endanger?
No one.
No one but Edward, and he could handle it. Maybe better than I could. My beeper trembled against my waist, sending shockwaves all along my ribcage. I hated putting the beeper on silent mode. The damn thing always scared me when it went off.
Edward said, "What the hell happened? You jumped like something bit you."
I hit the button on the beeper to shut it off and see who had called. The number lit up briefly. My beeper went off on silent mode. No noise, just vibration. He glanced at me.
"You are not going to call work."
He made it sound like a statement or an order.
"Look, Edward, I'm not feeling so hot, so don't argue with me."
I heard his breath ease out, but what could he say? I was driving. Short of drawing his gun and hijacking me, he was along for the ride. I took the next exit and located a payphone at a convenience store. The store lot was fully lit and made me a wonderful target, but after the ghouls, I wanted light. Edward watched me get out of the car with my billfold gripped in my hand. He did not get out to watch my back. Fine. I had my gun. If he wanted to pout, let him. I called work. Craig, our night secretary, answered.
"Animators, Inc., may I help you?"
"Hi, Craig, this is Anita. What's up?"
"Irving Griswold called, says to call him back ASAP or the meeting's off. He says you'd know what that meant, do you?"
"Yes. Thanks, Craig."
"You sound awful."
"Good night, Craig." I hung up on him. I felt tired and sluggish, and my throat hurt. I wanted to curl up somewhere dark and quiet for about a week. Instead, I called Irving.
"It's me," I said.
"Well, it's about time. Do you know the trouble I've gone through to set this up? You almost missed it."
"If you don't quit talking, I may still miss it. Tell me when and where." He did. If we hurried, we'd make it.
"Why is everyone so hot to do everything tonight?" I said. "Hey, if you don't want to meet, that's fine."
"Irving, I've had a very, very long night, so stop bitching at me."
"Are you all right?"
What a stupid question.
"Not really, but I'll live."
"If you're hurt, I'll try to get the meeting postponed, but I can't promise anything, Anita. It was your message that got him this far."
I leaned my forehead against the metal of the booth.
"I'll be there, Irving."
"I won't be."
He sounded thoroughly disgusted.
"One of the conditions was no reporters and no police."
I had to smile. Poor Irving. He was getting left out of everything. He hadn't been attacked by ghouls and almost blown up, though. Maybe I should save my pity for myself.
"Thanks, Irving. I owe you one."
"You owe me several," he said. "Be careful. I don't know what you're into this time, but it sounds bad."
He was fishing, and I knew it.
"Good night, Irving."
I hung up before he could ask any more questions.
I called Dolph's home phone number. I don't know why it couldn't wait until morning, but I had almost died tonight. If I did die, I wanted someone to hunt Zachary down. Dolph answered on the sixth ring. His voice sounded gruff with sleep.
"Yes?"
"This is Anita Blake, Dolph."
"What's wrong?"
His voice sounded almost alert. "I know who the murderer is."
"Tell me."
I told him. He took notes and asked questions. The biggest question came at the end.
"Can you prove any of this?"
"I can prove he wears a gree-gree. I can testify that he confessed to me. He tried to kill me. That I witnessed personally."
"It's going to be a tough sell to a jury or a judge."
"I know."
"I'll see what I can find out."
"We've almost got a solid case on him, Dolph."
"True, but it all hinges on you being alive to testify."
"Yeah, I'll be careful."
"You come down tomorrow and get all this information recorded officially."
"I will."
"Good work."
"Thanks," I said.
Good night, Anita.
Good night, Dolph.
I eased back into the car. We have a meeting with the were-rats in 45 minutes.
Why is it so important? He asked.
Because I think they can show us a back way into Nikolaos's lair. If we come in the front door, we'll never make it.
I started the car and pulled out into the road.
Who else did you call? He asked.
So he had been paying attention.
The police.
What?
Edward never likes dealing with the police. Fancy that.
If Zachary manages to kill me, I want someone else to be looking into it. He was silent for a little while. Then he asked,
Tell me about Nikolaos.
I shrugged.
She's a sadistic monster and she's over 1,000 years old.
I look forward to meeting her.
Don't, I said.
We've killed master vampires before, Anita. She's just one more.
No, Nikolaos is at least 1,000 years old. I don't think I've ever been so frightened of anything in my life.
He was silent, face unreadable.
What are you thinking? I asked.
That I love a challenge.
Then he smiled, a beautiful, spreading smile. Shit. Death had seen his ultimate goal, the biggest catch of all. He wasn't afraid of her, and he should have been. There aren't that many places open at 1:30 a.m., but Denny's is. There was something wrong with meeting were-rats in Denny's over coffee and donuts. Shouldn't we have been meeting in some dark alley? I wasn't complaining, mind you. It just struck me as, funny. Edward had gotten a spare shirt out of his bag o' weapons, so he was legal for Denny's. He went in first to make sure it wasn't another setup. If he took a table, it was safe. If he came back out, it wasn't safe. Simple. No one knew what he looked like yet. As long as he wasn't with me, he could go anywhere and no one would try to kill him. Amazing. I was beginning to feel like Typhoid Mary. Edward took a table. Safe. I walked into the bright lights and artificial comfort of the restaurant. The waitress had dark circles under her eyes, cleverly disguised by thick base, which made the circles look sort of pinkish. I looked past her. A man was motioning to me. Hand straight up, finger crooked like he was calling the waitress or some other subservient. I see my party now. Thanks anyway, I said. The restaurant was mostly empty in the wee hours of Monday, or rather, Tuesday morning. Two men sat at a table in front of the first man. They looked normal enough, but there was a sense of contained energy that seemed to spark in the air around them. Lycanthropes. I would have bet my life on it, and maybe I was. There was a couple, male and female, sitting catty-corner from the first two. I would have bet money they were lycanthropes, too. Edward had taken a table near them, but not too near. He had hunted lycanthropes before. He knew what to look for as well. As I passed the table, one of the men looked up. Pure brown eyes, so dark they were almost black, stared into mine. His face was square, body slender, small build. Muscles worked in his arms as he folded his hands under his chin and looked at me. I stared back. Then I was past him and to the booth where the Rat King sat. He was tall, at least 6 feet, dark brown skin with thick, short-cut black hair, brown eyes. His face was thin, arrogant, lips almost too soft for the haughty expression he gave me. He was darkly handsome, strongly Mexican, and his suspicion rode the air like lightning. I eased into the booth. I took a deep, steadying breath and looked across the counter at him.
I got your message. What do you want?
His voice was soft but deep, without a trace of accent. I want you to lead myself and at least one man into the tunnels beneath the Circus of the Damned. His frown deepened, forming faint wrinkles between his eyes.
Why should I do this for you?
Do you want your people free of the Master's influence? He nodded, still frowning.
I was really winning him over.
Guide us in through the dungeon entrance and I'll take care of it. He clasped his hands together on the table.
How can I trust you?
I'm not a bounty hunter. I have never harmed a lycanthrope.
We cannot fight beside you if you go against her. Even I cannot fight her. She calls to me. I don't answer, but I feel it. I can keep the small rats and my people from helping her against you, but that is all.
Just get us inside. We'll do the rest.
Are you so confident?
I'm willing to bet my life on it, I said.
He steepled his fingers against his lips, elbows on the table. The burn scar in his forearm was still there, even in human form, a rough, four-pointed crown.
I'll get you inside, he said.
I smiled. Thank you.
He stared at me. When you come back out alive, then you can thank me.
It's a deal.
I held my hand out.
After a moment's hesitation, he took it.
We shook on it. You wish to wait a few days? He asked.
No, I said. I want to go in tomorrow. He cocked his head to one side.
Are you sure?
Why? Is that a problem?
You are hurt. I thought you might wish to heal.
I was a little bruised and my throat hurt, but... How did you know?
You smell like death has brushed you close tonight.
I stared at him.
Irving never does this to me, the supernatural powers bit. I'm not saying he can't, but he works hard at being human. This man did not.
I took a deep breath.
That is my business.
He nodded.
We will call you and give you the place and time.
I stood up. He remained sitting. There didn't seem to be anything else to say, so I left. About 10 minutes later, Edward got into the car with me.
What now? He asked.
You mentioned your hotel room?
I'm going to sleep while I can.
And tomorrow?
You take me out and show me how the shotgun works.
Then? He asked.
Then we go after Nikolaos, I said.
He gave a shaky breath, almost a laugh.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Glad to see someone is enjoying all this.
He grinned at me.
I love my work, he said. I had to smile. Truth was, I loved my work, too.
Chapter 45
During the day, I learned how to use a shotgun. That night, I went caving with were-rats. The cave was dark. I stood in absolute blackness, gripping my flashlight. I touched my hand to my forehead and couldn't see a damn thing but the funny white images your eyes make when there is no light. I was wearing a hard hat with a light on it, turned off at present. The were-rats had insisted on it. All around me were sounds. Cries, moans, the popping of bone. A curious sliding sound like a knife drawing out of flesh. The were-rats were changing from human to animal. It sounded like it hurt. A lot. They had made me swear not to turn on a light until they told me to. I had never wanted to see so badly in my life. It couldn't be so horrible, could it? But a promise is a promise.
I sounded like Horton the Elephant.
A person is a person, no matter how small.
What the hell was I doing standing in the middle of a cave in the dark surrounded by were-rats quoting Dr. Seuss and trying to kill a 1,000-year-old vampire? It had been one of my stranger weeks.
Raphael, the Rat King, said, You may turn on your lights.
I did, instantly. My eyes seemed to leech on the light, eager to see. The ratmen stood in small groups in the wide, flat-roofed tunnel. There were 10 of them. I had counted them in human form. Now the 7 males were fur-covered and wearing jean cutoffs. 2 wore loose t-shirts. The 3 women wore loose dresses like maternity clothes. Their black button eyes glittered in the light. Everybody was furry. Edward came to stand near me. He was staring at the wares, face distant, unreadable. I touched his arm. I had told Raphael that I was not a bounty hunter, but Edward was, sometimes. I hoped I had not endangered these people.
Are you ready?
Raphael asked. He was the same sleek black rat man I remembered.
Yes, I said.
Edward nodded. The were-rats scattered to either side of us, scrambling over low, weathered flowstone. I said to no one in particular, I thought caves were damp. A smaller rat man in a t-shirt said,
Cherokee Caverns is dead cave.
I don't understand.
Live cave has water and growing formations. A dry cave where none of the formations are growing is called dead cave.
Oh, I said. He drew lips back from huge teeth. A smile, I think.
More than you wanted to know, huh?
Raphael hissed back.
We are not here to give guided tours, Louis. Now be quiet, both of you.
Louis shrugged and scrambled ahead of me. He was the same human that had been with Raphael in the restaurant, the one with the dark eyes. One of the females was nearly gray-furred. Her name was Lillian, and she was a doctor. She carried a backpack full of medical supplies. They seemed to be planning on us getting hurt. At least that meant they thought we would come out alive. I was beginning to wonder about that part myself. 2 hours later, the ceiling dropped to a point where I couldn't stand upright, and I learned what the hard hats they had given Edward and me were for. I scraped my head on the rock at least 1,000 times. I'd have knocked myself unconscious long before we saw Nikolaos. The rats seemed designed for the tunnel, sliding along, flattening their bodies in a strange, scrambling grace. Edward and I could not match it, not even close. He cursed softly behind me. His 5 inches of extra height were causing him pain. My lower back was an aching burn. He had to be in worse shape. There were pockets where the ceiling opened up and we could stand. I started looking very forward to them, like air pockets to a diver. The quality of darkness changed. Light. There was light up ahead, not much, but it was there. It flickered at the far end of the tunnel like a mirage. Raphael crouched beside us. Edward sat flat on the dry rock. I joined him.
There is your dungeon. We will wait here until near dark. If you have not come out, we will leave. After Nikolaos is dead, if we can, we will help you.
I nodded. The light on my hard hat nodded with me. Thank you for helping us. He shook his narrow, ratty face.
I have delivered you to the Devil's Door. Do not thank me for that.
I glanced at Edward. His face was still distant, unreadable. If he was interested in what the rat man had just said, I couldn't tell it. We might as well have been talking about a grocery list. Edward and I knelt before the opening into the dungeon. Torchlight flickered, incredibly bright after the darkness. Edward was cradling his Uzi that hung on a strap across his chest. I had the shotgun. I was also carrying my 2 pistols, 2 knives, and a derringer stuffed in the pocket of my jacket. It was a present from Edward. He had handed it to me with this advice. It kicks like a son of a bitch, but press it under someone's chin and it will blow their fucking head off. Nice to know. It was daylight outside. There shouldn't be a vampire stirring, but Burchard would be there. And if he saw us, Nikolaos would know. Somehow, she'd know. Goosebumps marched up my arms. We scrambled inside, ready to kill and maim. The room was empty. All that adrenaline sort of sat in my body, making my breathing too quick and my heart pound for no reason. The spot where Philip had been chained was clean. Someone had scrubbed it down real good. I fought an urge to touch the wall where he'd been. Edward called softly, "Anita." He was at the door. I hurried up to him. "What's wrong?" he asked. "She killed Philip in here." "Keep your mind on business. I don't want to die because you're daydreaming." I started to get angry and swallowed it. He was right. Edward tried the door and it opened. No prisoners, no need to lock it. I took the left side of the door, and he took the right. The corridor was empty. My hands were sweating on the shotgun. Edward led off down the right-hand side of the corridor. I followed him into the dragon's lair. I didn't feel much like a knight. I was fresh out of shiny steeds. Or was that shiny armor? Whatever. We were here. This was it. I could taste my heart in my throat. Chapter 46. The dragon didn't come out and eat us right away. In fact, the place was quiet. As the cliche goes, too quiet. I stepped close to Edward and whispered,
"I don't mean to complain, but where is everybody?"
He leaned his back against the wall and said, "Maybe you killed Winter. That just leaves Burchard. Maybe he's on an errand." I shook my head. "This is too easy." "Don't worry. Something'll go wrong soon." He continued down the corridor, and I followed. It took me 3 steps to realize Edward had made a joke. The corridor opened into a huge room like Nikolaos's throne room, but there was no chair here. There were coffins. 5 of them spaced around the room on raised platforms so they didn't have to sit on the floor in the draft. Tall, iron candelabra burned in the room, one at the foot and head of each coffin. Most vampires made some effort to hide their coffins, but not Nikolaos.
Arrogant, Edward whispered. Yes,
I whispered back. You always whispered around the coffins at first, as if it were a funeral and they could hear you.
There was a neck-ruffling smell to the room, stale. It caught at the back of my throat and was almost a taste, faintly metallic. It was like the smell of snakes kept in cages.
You knew there was nothing warm and furry in this room just by smell.
And that really doesn't do it justice.
It was the smell of vampires.
The first coffin was dark, well-varnished wood with golden handles. It was wider at the shoulder area and then narrowed, following the contour of the human body. Older coffins did that sometimes.
We start here, I said. Edward didn't argue. He let the machine gun hang by its strap and drew his pistol.
You're covered, he said.
I laid the shotgun on the floor in front of the coffin, gripped the edge of the lid, said a quick prayer, and lifted. Valentine lay in the coffin. His scarred face was bare. He was still dressed as a riverboat gambler, but this time in black. His frilly shirt was crimson. The colors didn't look good against his auburn hair. One hand was half curled over his thigh, a careless sleeper's gesture. A very human gesture. Edward peered into the coffin, gun pointed ceilingward.
This the one you threw holy water on?
I nodded.
Did a bang-up job, Edward said.
Valentine never moved. I couldn't even see him breathe. I wiped my sweating palms on my jeans and felt for a pulse in his wrist. Nothing. His skin was cool to the touch. He was dead. It wasn't murder, no matter what the new laws said. You can't kill a corpse. The wrist pulsed. I jerked back like he'd burned me.
What's wrong? Edward asked.
I got a pulse.
It happens sometimes.
I nodded. Yeah, it happens sometimes. If you waited long enough, the heart did beat, blood did flow, but so slow that it was painful to watch. Dead. I was beginning to think I didn't know what that meant. I knew one thing. If night fell with us here, we would die, or wish we had. Valentine had helped kill over 20 people. He had nearly killed me. When Nikolaos withdrew her protection, he'd finish the job if he could. We had come to kill Nikolaos.
I think she would withdraw her protection ASAP.
As the old saying goes, it was him or me. I preferred him. I shook off the shoulder straps of the backpack.
What are you looking for? Edward asked.
Stake and hammer, I said without looking up.
Not going to use the shotgun?
I glanced up at him.
Oh, right. Why not rent a marching band while we're at it? If you just want to be quiet, there is another way.
He had a slight smile on his face. I had the sharpened stake in my hand, but I was willing to listen. I've staked most of the vampires that I've killed, but it never gets easier. It is hard, messy work, though I don't throw up anymore. I am a professional, after all. He took a small case out of his own backpack. It held syringes. He drew out an ampoule of some grayish liquid.
Silver nitrate, he said.
Silver. Bane of the undead. Scourge of the supernatural. And all nicely modernized.
Does it work? I asked.
It works. He filled one syringe and asked,
How old is this one?
A little over 100, I said.
2 ought to do it.
He shoved the needle into the big vein in Valentine's neck. Before he had filled the syringe a second time, the body shivered. He shoved the second dose into the neck. Valentine's body arched against the walls of the coffin. His mouth opened and closed. He gasped for air as if he were drowning. Edward filled up another syringe and handed it towards me. I stared at it.
It isn't going to bite, he said.
I took it gingerly between my thumb and the first 2 fingers on my right hand.
What's the matter with you? He asked.
I'm not a big fan of needles. He grinned.
You're afraid of needles?
I scowled at him.
Not exactly.
Valentine's body shook and bucked, hands thumping against the wooden walls.
It made a small, helpless noise. His eyes never opened. He was going to sleep through his own death. He gave one last shuddering jump, then collapsed against the side of the coffin like a broken rag doll.
He doesn't look very dead, I said.
They never do. Stake their heart and chop off their heads and you know they're dead.
This isn't staking, he said. I didn't like it. Valentine lay there looking very whole and nearly human. I wanted to see some rotting flesh and bones turn to dust. I wanted to know he was dead.
No one has ever gotten up out of their coffin after a syringe full of silver nitrate, Anita.
I nodded, but remained unconvinced.
You check the other side. Go on.
I went, but I kept glancing back at Valentine. He had haunted my nightmares for years, nearly killed me. He just didn't look dead enough for me.
I opened the first coffin on my side, one-handed, holding the syringe carefully. An injection of silver nitrate probably wouldn't do me much good either. The coffin was empty. The white imitation silk lining had conformed to the body like a mattress, but the body wasn't there. I flinched and stared around the room, but there was nothing there. I stared slowly upward, hoping that there was nothing floating above me. There wasn't. Thank you, God. I remembered to breathe, finally. It was probably Teresa's coffin. Yeah, that was it. I left it open and went to the next one. It was a newer model, probably fake wood, but nice and polished. The black male was in it. I had never gotten his name. Now I never would. I knew what it meant coming in here. Not just defending yourself, but taking out the vampires while they lay helpless. As far as I knew, this vampire had never hurt anyone. I laughed then. He was Nikolaos's protege. Did I really think he'd never tasted human blood? No. I pressed the needle against his neck and swallowed hard. I hated needles. No particular reason. I shoved it in and closed my eyes while I depressed the plunger. I could have pounded a stake through his heart, but sticking a needle in him put cold chills down my spine. Edward called, "Anita!" I whirled and found Aubrey sitting up in his coffin. He had Edward by the throat and was slowly lifting him off his feet. The shotgun was still by Valentine's coffin. Damn! I drew the 9mm and fired at Aubrey's forehead. The bullet tossed his head back, but he just smiled and raised Edward straight-armed, legs dangling. I ran for the shotgun. Edward was having to use both hands to keep himself from being strangled by his own weight. He dropped one hand, fumbling for the machine gun. Aubrey caught his wrist. I picked up the shotgun, took two steps towards them and fired from 3 feet away. Aubrey's head exploded. Blood and brains spattered over the wall. The hands lowered Edward to the floor but didn't let go. Edward drew a ragged breath. The right hand convulsed around his throat, fingers digging for his windpipe. I had to step around Edward to fire at the chest. The blast took out the heart and most of the left side of the chest. The left arm sort of hung there by strands of tissue and bone. The corpse flopped back into its coffin. Edward dropped to his knees, breath wheezing and choking through his throat. "Nod if you can breathe, Edward," I said. Though if Aubrey had crushed his windpipe, I don't know what I could have done. Run back and gotten Lily and the doctor rat, maybe. Edward nodded. His face was a mottled reddish-purple, but he was breathing. My ears were ringing with the sound of the shotgun inside the stone walls. So much for surprise. So much for silver nitrate. I pumped another round into the gun and went to Valentine's coffin. I blew him apart. Now he was dead. Edward staggered to his feet. He croaked,
"How old was that thing?"
"Over 500, I said. He swallowed, and it looked like it hurt.
"Shit."
I wouldn't try sticking any needles into Nikolaos. He managed to glare at me, still half-leaning against Aubrey's coffin. I turned to the fifth coffin, the one we had saved until last without any talk between us. It was set against the far wall, a dainty white coffin, too small for an adult. Candlelight gleamed on the carvings in the lid. I was tempted to just blow a hole in the coffin, but I had to see her. I had to see what I was shooting at. My heart started thudding in my throat. My chest was tight. She was a master vampire. Killing them, even in daylight, is a chancy thing. Their gaze can trap you until nightfall. Their minds, their voices, so much power. And Nikolaos was the most powerful I'd ever seen. I had my blessed cross. I would be all right. I had had too many crosses taken from me to feel completely safe. Oh well. I tried to raise the lid one-handed, but it was heavy and not balanced for easy opening like modern coffins.
Can you back me on this, Edward? Or are you still relearning how to breathe?
Edward came to stand beside me. His face looked almost its normal color. He took hold of the lid and I readied the shotgun. He lifted, and the whole lid slid off. It wasn't hinged on. I said,
"Shit!"
The coffin was empty.
"Are you looking for me?"
A high, musical voice called from the doorway.
"Freeze. I believe that is the word. We have the drop on you."
"I wouldn't advise going for your gun," Burchard said. I glanced at Edward and found his hands close to the machine gun, but not close enough. His face was unreadable, calm, normal. Just a Sunday drive. I was so scared I could taste bile at the back of my throat. We looked at each other and raised our hands. "Turn round slowly," Burchard said. We did. He was holding a semi-automatic rifle of some kind. I'm not the gun freak Edward is, so I didn't know the make and model, but I knew it'd make a big hole. There was also a sword hilt sticking over his back. A sword. An honest-to-God sword. Zachary was standing beside him holding a pistol. He held it two-handed, arms stiff. He didn't seem happy. Burchard held the rifle like he was born with it. "Drop your weapons, please, and lace your fingers on top of your heads." We did what he asked. Edward dropped the machine gun, and I lost the shotgun. We had plenty more guns. Nikolaos stood to one side. Her face was cold, angry. Her voice, when it came, echoed through the room.
"I am older than anything you have ever imagined. Did you think daylight holds me prisoner? After 1,000 years?
She walked out into the room, careful not to cross in front of Burchard and Zachary. She glanced at the remains in the coffins.
"You will pay for this, animator."
She smiled then, and I had never seen anything more evil.
"Strip them of the rest of their weaponry, Burchard. Then we will give the animator a treat."
They stood in front of us, but not too close. "Up against the wall, animator," Burchard said. "If the man moves, Zachary, shoot him." Burchard shoved me into the wall and frisked me very thoroughly. He didn't check my teeth or have me drop my pants, but that was about it. He found everything I was carrying, even the derringer. He shoved my cross into his pocket. Maybe I could tattoo one on my arm? Probably wouldn't work. I went out to stand with Zachary, and Edward got his turn. I stared at Zachary.
"Does she know?"
I asked.
"Shut up."
I smiled.
"She doesn't, does she?"
"Shut up." Edward came back, and we stood there with our hands on top of our heads, weapons gone. It was not a pretty sight. Adrenaline was bubbling like champagne, and my pulse was threatening to jump out of my throat. I wasn't afraid of the guns, not really. I was afraid of Nikolaos. What would she do to us? To me? If I had a choice, I'd force them to shoot me. It had to be better than anything Nikolaos had in her evil little mind. "They are unarmed, mistress," Burchard said.
"Good," she said. "Do you know what we were doing while you destroyed my people?"
I didn't think she wanted an answer, so I didn't give her one.
"We were preparing a friend of yours, animator."
My stomach jerked. I had a wild image of Catherine, but she was out of town. My God, Ronnie. Did they have Ronnie? It must have showed on my face because Nikolaos laughed, high and wild, an excited tittering. "I really hate that laugh," I said. "Silence," Burchard said.
"Oh, Anita, you are so amusing. I will enjoy making you one of my people."
Her voice started high and childlike, and ended low enough to crawl down my spine. She called out in a clear voice,
"Enter this room now."
I heard shuffling footsteps. Then Philip walked into the room. The horrible wound at his throat was thick white scar tissue. He stared around the room as if he didn't really see it. I whispered,
"Dear God."
They had raised him from the dead. Chapter 47. Nikolaos danced around him. The skirt of her pastel pink dress swirled around her. The large pink bow in her hair bobbed as she twirled, arms outstretched. Her slender legs were covered in white leotards. The shoes were white with pink bows. She stopped, laughing and breathless. A healthy pink flush on her cheeks, eyes sparkling. How did she do that?
He looks very alive, doesn't he?
She stalked around him, hand brushing his arm. He drew away from her, eyes following her every move, afraid. He remembered her. God help us. He remembered her.
Do you want to see him put through his paces?
She asked. I hoped I didn't understand her. I fought to keep my face blank. I must have succeeded because she stomped over to me, hands on hips.
Well,
she said,
do you want to watch your lover perform?
I swallowed bile hard. Maybe I should just throw up on her. That would teach her. With you? I asked. She sidled up to me, hands clasped behind her back.
It could be you. Your choice.
Her face was almost touching mine. Eyes so damned wide and innocent that it seemed sacrilegious. Neither sounds very appealing, I said.
Pity.
She half-skipped back to Philip. He was naked, and his tanned body was still handsome. What were a few more scars? You didn't know I was going to be here, so why raise Philip from the dead? I asked. She turned on the heels of her little shoes.
We raised him so he could try to kill Aubrey. Murdered zombies can be so much fun while they try to kill their murderers. We thought we'd give him a chance while Aubrey was asleep. Aubrey can move if you disturb him.
She glanced at Edward.
But then, you know that.
You were going to let Aubrey kill him again, I said. She nodded, head bobbing.
Mm-hmm.
You bitch, I said. Burchard shoved the rifle butt into my stomach, and I dropped to my knees. I panted, trying to breathe. It didn't help much. Edward was staring very fixedly at Zachary, who was holding the pistol square on his chest. You didn't have to be good at that range, or even lucky. Just squeeze the trigger and kill someone. Poof.
I can make you do whatever I please, Nikolaos said.
A fresh spurt of adrenaline rushed through me. It was too much. I threw up in the corner. Nerves and being hit very hard in the stomach with a rifle. Nerves I'd had before. The rifle butt was a new experience. Nikolaos said.
Do I frighten you that much?
I managed to stand up at last. Yes, I said. Why deny it? She clapped her hands together.
Oh, goody!
Her face shifted gears, instant switch. The little girl was gone, and no amount of pink frilly dresses would bring her back. Nikolaos's face was thinner, alien. The eyes were great drowning pools.
Hear me, Anita. Feel my power in your veins.
I stood there, staring at the floor, fear like a cold rush on my skin. I waited for something to tug at my soul. Her power to roll me under and away. Nothing happened. Nikolaos frowned. The little girl was back.
I bit you, animator. You should crawl if I ask it. What did you do?
I breathed a small, heartfelt prayer and answered her. Holy water. She snarled.
This time we will keep you with us until after the third bite. You will take Teresa's place. Perhaps then you will be more eager to find out who is murdering vampires.
I fought with everything in me not to glance at Zachary. Not because I didn't want to give him away. I would do that, but I was waiting for the moment when it would help us. It might get Zachary killed, but it wouldn't take out Burchard or Nikolaos. Zachary was the least dangerous person in this whole room. I don't think so, I said.
Oh, but I do, animator.
I would rather die. She spread her arms wide.
But I want you to die, Anita. I want you to die.
That makes us even, I said. She giggled. The sound made my teeth hurt. If she really wanted to torture me, all she had to do was lock me in a room and laugh at me. Now that would be hell.
Come on, boys and girls, let's go play in the dungeon.
Nikolaos led the way. Burchard motioned for us to follow. We did. Zachary and he brought up the rear, guns in hand. Philip stood uncertainly in the middle of the room, watching us go. Nikolaos called back,
Have him follow us, Zachary.
Zachary called, Come, Philip, follow me. He turned and walked after us, his eyes still uncertain and not really focused. Go on, Burchard said. He half raised the rifle, and I went. Nikolaos called back,
Gazing at your lover, how nice!
It wasn't a long enough walk to the dungeon door. If they tried to chain me to the wall, I'd rush them. I'd force them to kill me. Which meant I'd better rush Zachary. Burchard might wound me or knock me unconscious, and that would be very, very bad. Nikolaos led us down the steps and out into the floor. What a day for a parade. Philip followed, but he was looking around now, really seeing things. He froze, staring at the place where Aubrey had killed him. His hand reached out to touch the wall. He flexed his hand, rubbing fingers into his palm as if he was feeling something. A hand went to his neck and found the scar. He screamed. It echoed against the walls. Philip? I said. Burchard held me back with the rifle. Philip crouched in the corner, face hidden, arms locked around his knees. He was making a high, keening noise. Nikolaos laughed. Stop it! Stop it! I walked towards Philip, and Burchard shoved the gun against my chest. I yelled into his face, Shoot me! Shoot me, damn it! It's gotta be better than this!
Enough, Nikolaos said.
She stalked over to me, and I gave ground. She kept walking, forcing me to back up until I bumped against the wall.
I don't want you shot, Anita, but I want you hurt. You killed Winter with your little knife. Let's see how good you really are.
She strode away from me.
Burchard, give her back her knives.
He never even hesitated or asked why. He just walked over to me and handed them to me, hilt first. I didn't question it either. I took them. Nikolaos was suddenly beside Edward. He started to move away.
Kill him if he moves again, Zachary.
Zachary came to stand close, gun out.
Kneel, mortal, she said.
Edward didn't do it. He glanced at me. Nikolaos kicked him in the bend of the knee hard enough to make him grunt. He dropped to one knee, and she grabbed his right arm and tugged it behind his back. One slender hand grabbed his throat.
I'll tear out your throat if you move, human. I can feel your pulse like a butterfly beating against my hand.
She laughed and filled the room with warm, jostling horror.
Now, Burchard, show her what it means to use a knife.
Burchard went to the far wall with the door above him at the top of the steps. He laid the rifle on the floor and unbuckled his sword harness and laid that beside the rifle. Then he drew a long knife with a nearly triangular blade. He did some quick stretches to limber his muscles, and I stood staring at him. I know how to use a knife. I can throw well. I practice that. Most people are afraid of knives. If you show yourself willing to carve someone up, they tend to be afraid of you. Burchard was not most people. He went down into a slight crouch, knife held loose but firm in his right hand.
Fight, Burchard animator, or this one dies.
She pulled his arm, sharp, but he didn't cry out. She could dislocate his shoulder, and Edward wouldn't cry out. I put the knife back in its right wrist sheath. Fighting with a knife in each hand may look nifty, but I've never really mastered it. A lot of people don't. Hey, Burchard didn't have two knives either. Is this to the death? I asked.
You will not be able to kill Burchard, Anita. So silly. Burchard is only going to cut you. Let you taste the blade, nothing too serious. I don't want you to lose too much blood.
There was an undercurrent of laughter in her voice. Then it was gone. Her voice crawled through the room like a fire wind.
I want to see you bleed.
Great. Burchard began to circle me, and I kept the wall at my back. He rushed me, knife flashing.
I held my ground, dodging his blade, and slashing at him as he darted in. My knife hit empty air. He was standing out of reach, staring at me. He had had 600 years of practice, give or take. I couldn't top that. I couldn't even come close. He smiled. I gave him a slight nod. He nodded back. A sign of respect between two warriors, maybe. Either that or he was playing with me. Guess which way I voted. His knife was suddenly there, slicing my arm open. I slashed outward and caught him across the stomach. He darted into me, not away. I dodged the knife and stumbled away from the wall. He smiled. Damn it, he'd wanted to get me out in the open. His reach was twice mine. The pain in my arm was sharp and immediate, but there was a thin line of crimson on his flat stomach. I smiled at him. His eyes flinched just a little. Was the mighty warrior uneasy? I hoped so. I backed away from him. This was ridiculous. We were going to die piece by piece, both of us. What the hell? I charged Burchard, slashing. It caught him by surprise, and he backpedaled. I mirrored his crouch, and we began to circle the floor. And I said, I know who the murderer is. Burchard's eyebrows raised. Nicolao said,
What did you say?
I know who is killing vampires. Burchard was suddenly inside my arm, slicing my shirt. It didn't hurt. He was playing with me.
Who?
Nicolao said.
Tell me, or I will kill this human.
Sure, I said. Zachary screamed. No! He turned to fire at me. The bullet whined overhead. Burchard and I both sank to the floor. Edward screamed. I half rose to run to him. His arm was twisted at a funny angle, but he was alive. Zachary's gun went off twice, and Nicolaos took it away from him, tossing it to the floor. She grabbed him and forced him against her body, bending him at the waist, cradling him. Her head darted downward. Zachary shrieked. Burchard was on his knees watching the show. I stabbed my knife into his back. It thunked solid and hilt deep. His spine stiffened, one hand trying to tear out the blade. I didn't wait to see if he could do it. I drew my other knife and plunged it into the side of his throat. Blood poured down my hand when I took the knife out. I stabbed him again, and he fell slowly forward, face down on the floor. Nicolaos let Zachary drop to the floor and turned, face bloodstained, the front of her pink dress crimson. Blood spattered on her white leotards. Zachary's throat was torn out. He lay gasping on the floor, but still moving, alive. She stared at Burchard's body, then screamed, a wild banshee sound that wailed and echoed. She rushed me, hands outstretched. I threw the knife, and she batted it away. She hit me, the force of her body slamming me into the floor, her scrambling on top of me. She was still screaming, over and over. She held my head to one side. No mind tricks, brute strength. I screamed, No! A gun fired, and Nicolaos jerked, once, twice. She rose off me, and I felt the wind. It was creeping through the room like the beginnings of a storm. Edward leaned against the wall, holding Zachary's dropped gun. Nicolaos went for him, and he emptied the gun into her frail body. She didn't even hesitate. I sat up and watched her stalk towards Edward. He threw the empty gun at her. She was suddenly on him, forcing him back into the floor. The sword lay on the floor, nearly as tall as I was. I drew it out of its sheath. Heavy, awkward, drawing my arm down. I raised it over my head, flat of the blade half resting on my shoulder, and ran for Nicolaos. She was talking again in a high, sing-song voice.
I will make you mine, mortal! Mine!
Edward screamed. I couldn't see why. I raised the sword, and its weight carried it down and across like it was meant to. It bit into her neck with a great wet thunk. The sword grated on bone, and I drew it out. The tip fell to scrape on the floor. Nicolaos turned to me and started to stand. I raised the sword, and it cut outward, swinging my body with it. Bone cracked, and I fell to the floor as Nicolaos tumbled to her knees. Her head still hung by strips of meat and skin. She blinked at me and tried to stand up. I screamed and drove the blade upward with everything I had. It took her between the breasts, and I stood running with it, shoving it in. Blood poured. I pinned her against the wall. The blade shoved out her back, scraping along the wall as she slid downward. I dropped to my knees beside the body. Yes, the body. She was dead. I looked back at Edward. There was blood on his neck.
She bit me,
he said. I was gasping for air, having trouble breathing, but it was wonderful. I was alive and she wasn't. She fucking wasn't. Don't worry, Edward. I'll help you. Plenty of holy water left. I smiled. He stared at me a minute, then laughed, and I laughed with him. We were still laughing when the were-rats crept in from the tunnel. Raphael, the Rat King, stared at the carnage with black button eyes.
She is dead.
Ding dong, the witch is dead, I said. Edward picked it up, half singing, The Wicked Old Witch. We collapsed into laughter again, and Lily and the doctor, all covered with fur, tended our hurts, Edward first. Zachary was still lying on the ground. The wound at his throat was beginning to close up, skin knitting together. He would live, if that was the right word. I picked my knife up off the floor and staggered to him. The rats watched me. No one interfered. I dropped to my knees beside him and ripped the sleeve of his shirt. I laid the gree-gree bare. He still couldn't talk, but his eyes widened.
Remember when I tried to touch this with my own blood? You stopped me. You seemed afraid, and I didn't understand why.
I sat beside him and watched him heal.
Every gree-gree has a thing you must do for it. Vampire blood for this one. And one thing you must never do, or the magic stops. Poof.
I held up my arm, dripping blood quite nicely.
Human blood, Zachary. Is that bad?
He managed a noise like,
Don't.
Blood dripped down my elbow and hung, thick and trembling, over his arm. He sort of shook his head, No, no. The blood dripped down and splatted on his arm, but it didn't touch the gree-gree. His whole body relaxed. I've got no patience today, Zachary. I rubbed blood along the woven band. His eyes flared, showing white. He made a strangling noise in his throat. His hands scrabbled at the floor. His chest jerked as if he couldn't breathe. A sigh ran out of his body, a long whoosh of breath. And he was quiet. I checked for a pulse. Nothing. I cut the gree-gree off with my knife, balled it in my hand and shoved it in my pocket. Evil piece of work. Lillian came to bind my arm up.
This is just temporary. You'll need stitches.
I nodded and got to my feet. Edward called. Where are you going? To get the rest of our guns. To find Jean-Claude. I didn't say that part out loud. I didn't think Edward would understand. Two of the rat men went with me. That was fine. They could come as long as they didn't interfere. Philip was still huddled in the corner. I left him there. I did get the guns. I strung the machine gun over my shoulders and kept the shotgun in my hands, loaded for bear. I had killed a 1,000-year-old vampire. Nah, not me. Surely not. The ratmen and I found the punishment room. There were 6 coffins in it. Each had a blessed cross on its lid and silver chains to hold the lid down. The 3rd coffin held Willie, so deeply asleep that he seemed like he would never wake. I left him like that, to wake with the night, to go on about his business. Willie wasn't a bad person, and for a vampire, he was excellent. All the other coffins were empty, only the last one still unopened. I undid the chains and laid the cross on the ground. Jean-Claude stared up at me. His eyes were midnight fire, his smile gentle. I flashed on the first dream and the coffin filled with blood, him reaching for me. I stepped back, and he rose from the coffin. The ratmen stepped back, hissing. It's all right, I said. He's sort of on our side. He stepped from the coffin like he'd had a good nap. He smiled and extended a hand.
I knew you would do it, ma petite.
You arrogant son of a bitch. I smashed the shotgun butt into his stomach. He doubled over just enough. I hit him in the jaw. He rocked back. Get out of my mind! He rubbed his face and came away with blood.
The marks are permanent, Anita. I cannot take them back.
I gripped the shotgun until my hands ached. Blood began to trickle down my arm from the wound. I thought about it.
For one moment, I considered blowing his perfect face away. I didn't do it. I would probably regret it later.
Can you stay out of my dreams at least? I asked.
That I can do. I am sorry, ma petite.
Stop calling me that. He shrugged. His black hair had nearly crimson highlights in the torchlight. Breathtaking. Stop playing with my mind, Jean-Claude.
Whatever do you mean?
He asked. I know that the otherworldly beauty is a trick, so stop it.
I am not doing it,
he said. What is that supposed to mean?
When you have the answer, Anita, come back to me, and we will talk.
I was too tired for riddles. Who do you think you are, using people like this?
I am the new master of the city,
he said. He was suddenly next to me, fingers touching my cheek.
And you put me upon the throne.
I jerked away from him. You stay away from me for a while, Jean-Claude, or I swear.
You'll kill me?
He said. He was smiling, laughing at me. I didn't shoot him. And some people say I have no sense of humor. I found a room with a dirt floor and several shallow graves. Philip let me lead him to the room. It was only when we stood staring down at the fresh-turned earth that he turned to me.
Anita?
Hush, I said.
Anita, what's happening?
He was beginning to remember. He would become more alive in a few hours, up to a point. It would almost be the real Philip for a day or two.
Anita?
His voice was high and uncertain, a little boy afraid of the dark. He grabbed my arm, and his hand felt very real. His eyes were still that perfect brown.
What's going on?
I stood on tiptoe and kissed his cheek. His skin was warm.
You need to rest, Philip. You're tired.
He nodded.
Tired,
he said. I led him to the soft dirt. He lay down on it, then sat up, eyes wild, grabbing for me.
Aubrey, he...
Aubrey's dead. He can't hurt you anymore.
Dead?
He stared down the length of his body as if just seeing it.
Aubrey killed me.
I nodded.
Yes, Philip. I'm scared.
I held him, rubbing his back in smooth, useless circles. His arms hugged me like he would never let go.
Anita! Hush. Hush, it's all right. It's all right. You're going to put me back, aren't you?
He drew back so he could see my face. Yes, I said.
I don't want to die. You're already dead.
He stared down at his hands, flexing them.
Dead?
He whispered.
Dead?
He lay down on the fresh-turned earth.
Put me back,
he said. And I did. At the end, his eyes closed and his face went slack. Dead. He sank into the grave and was gone. I dropped to my knees beside Philip's grave and wept. Chapter 48. Edward had a dislocated shoulder and two broken bones in his arm, plus one vampire bite. I had 14 stitches. We both healed. Philip's body was moved to a local cemetery. Every time I work in it, I have to go by and say hello, even though I know Philip is dead and doesn't care. Graves are for the living, not the dead. It gives us something to concentrate on instead of the fact that our loved one is rotting under the ground. The dead don't care about pretty flowers and carved marble statues. Jean-Claude sent me a dozen pure white, long-stemmed roses. The card read,
"If you have answered the question truthfully, come dancing with me."
I wrote no on the back of the card and slipped it under the door at Guilty Pleasures during daylight hours. I had been attracted to Jean-Claude. Maybe I still was. So what? He thought it changed things. It didn't. All I had to do was visit Philip's grave to know that. Oh, hell, I didn't even have to go that far. I know who and what I am. I am the executioner, and I don't date vampires. I kill them.
This is Kimberly Alexis. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Guilty Pleasures. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Guilty Pleasures is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Inc. Copyright 2009, all rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.